and welcome to the Face of Pro-Life. Today I'm speaking with Father Angelo Geiger from the Franciscan Friars of the Immaculate. Thank you so much for joining us today,
Welcome,
Father.
Brian.
I haven't seen you in a while.
It's been a while, yeah.
There's so many things going on in the world, and I kind of wanted to step back for a moment and talk a little bit about a very prophetic document that was written in the 60s by Pope Paul VI called Humana Vitae. Could you tell our viewers just a little bit about, you know, some of the prophecies basically that he made in this document and why he wrote it?
The document was the fruit of a discussion over whether or not the contraceptive pill was morally acceptable. Of course, the church has always condemned contraception, but there was a specific question about whether this pill constituted the sin of contraception. And in the end, after considerable study and reflection and commissions being assigned to study the question, the Pope said, it is immoral. You know, it's forbidden because every form of contraception, artificial birth control, interventions into the procreative process which render the very process itself sterile, separate the purposes of marriage and the marital act, which is both to an expression of unity of between the man and the woman and the transmission of human life. The two things have to be connected, and when you disconnect them, the act becomes immoral. So that was the determination of the document, and in the process, the Holy Father wanted to take these hard words. They were hard words. They weren't received well.
Right. I mean, people were hoping because the United States had just accepted artificial contraception, and I think some of the Catholic bishops were hoping that, you know, he was going to come down
right.
on
fact,
the other side.
The commission that he assigned, it recommended that he say it's okay, and he went against the commission.
God bless him.
And the document was prophetic because he said, you know, that if contraceptive mentality became prevalent, that we'd have abortion and the abuse of women and the detriment of marriage and the body would be treated like a machine.
And increased divorce rates.
Right.
You know,
and
infidelity.
Everything he said was correct, too. You know, all came true.
And truly, you know, this was kind of like right around the time, too, that women were expressing themselves and wanting, you know, equal rights. And and yet, if we would have followed his example, women would have been at a much higher state than they are now. Because right now, like you said, they're being treated as objects, you know, totally. And it's because there are no consequences. If a woman, you get a woman on a pill, there's no consequences. And if she does happen to get pregnant, well, then, you know, she has an abortion.
Right.
And, you know, I can have, you know, sex outside of my marriage and there's no consequences, you know, because the woman's not going to get pregnant. And, of course, if she does, she
That was why, you know, abortion rights was the second wave of feminism, you know, to disconnect a woman from her dependence on a man and the possibility of her getting pregnant and being in a situation which puts her at a disadvantage.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was like one of the first steps towards treating children really as not just a burden, but basically a piece of property.
Right.
You know, just like we said, slaves were a property that we could do whatever we wanted. Pretty much the Supreme Court came down with almost the same wording, you know, that the unborn children is something that we can dispose of.
Right. Feminism fed into that very much because of this idea that a woman is at this great disadvantage by being a woman, being able to become pregnant. You know, the fetus by many feminists was treated like a parasite, spoken of like a parasite.
The opposite is actually true. I mean, having a baby grow inside your womb is what makes you special.
Exactly.
You know, that's what you were built for.
Yeah, but the society has to respect that reality and then, you know, treat women in accordance with that dignity. And that's part of the problem. That's one of the things that has motivated feminists, but you know, they've largely contributed to the problem themselves. Because a third wave of feminism has been to assert their right, you know, to be sex objects and to be still maintain that independence and to have it all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
To have it all.
And in reality, we've
and in the process and in process, yeah, everyone loses their dignity, and most especially the most innocent and helpless, which is the unborn child.
Yeah, yeah.
Who now is treated, like you say, like an object, and in the process of being treated like an object, when people actually want the child is still an object, you know, a possession, something that I want, my right, etc. And so, along with contraception and abortion, you know, we have other sins that are not, you know, anti-conception or the destruction, you know, the deliberate or the intentional destruction of the child that they want, but all kinds of other sins happen in the process of trying to conceive, trying mm-hmm. to become pregnant.
And I think that's where we've come more recently, and that is, you know, after all these years of people trying not to have kids, now when they want to have kids, they find out that they're infertile, and then they mm-hmm. have to go to heroic lengths to try to conceive. Now, you know, it used to be where you could, you know, not easily, but more easily adopt children. But now right. that we're aborting, you know, almost 99% of the unwanted babies,
right.
You know, there's fewer and fewer babies to adopt. And so in the 70s, they developed the in vitro fertilization.
Right.
And the church has always considered that an evil.
Right. Because of Humana Vitae, the teaching of the church, which is reaffirmed in Humana Vitae, which is that the procreative and generative, I mean, the unitive and generative or procreative aspects always remain together. So that the marital embrace, the conjugal act, must always be open to human life. You can't deliberately thwart or render the marital act infertile, sterile. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's also because of the dignity of the human person, the child to be conceived. That child deserves to be conceived within a loving act by its own mother and father.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone deserves to know their mother and father, if at all possible. And they deserve to be conceived within the marital act, within the loving embrace of a husband and wife, as God intended it, you know, because that's in keeping with the dignity God has bestowed on the human person.
And
it's about the child's identity. It's about the child's right to have a mom and a dad. It's about the child's right to know that his parents, you know, are trying to love each other. Not that this all works out, you know,
perfectly
in every instance, but the nature of man, being a man or being a woman, the nature of marriage, which is what it is, not because the church made it what it is or the state made it is, but because there are men and women, and because of the nature of procreation and the way that human beings are conceived.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's heartbreaking to want to start a family and not being able to physically. So I mean, you can understand how people can be lured into
sure. The church approves of means to help people with infertility. You know, as long as it's an attempt to render the marital act fertile
mm-hmm.
and not to do it outside of the marital act through in vitro or through artificial insemination.
Yeah, and I know we've had Dr. Carpentier on here, and he is able to use natural methods mm-hmm. to help women who appear to be infertile to conceive and without any in vitro fertilization, mm-hmm. without any dangerous hormones. But that's one thing that you know, women don't understand is that you know, in order to even get in vitro fertilization, they have to take dangerous drugs to mm-hmm. Super ovulate so that they can collect multiple numbers of eggs. And then just the horrors that have come out of in vitro fertilization.
Yeah, they pile up. They pile up because, you know, there can be artificial insemination, which is an evil in itself,
right,
because it's trying to conceive a child outside of the marital act, and it very often, you know, involves other sins like masturbation in order to make it happen, and then and that's one evil,
right?
You know, but then you can pile onto that by even conceiving the child outside the womb, mm-hmm, in a test tube, and then transplanting the embryo, and it could be between, you know, it could be the mother and the father's sex cells that are being used. But then you can also pile onto that even further. Well, I should stop and say, you know, that the fact of the matter is that when they start doing that, then you're creating multiple embryos,
right,
and those embryos are either frozen or they just die.
Or they implant several in order to increase the success rate and then do selective abortions,
right,
on, say, they only wanted,
right,
twins, you know, and
right,
they kill the other four that are in there.
Right.
You know, I mean.
And then beyond that, then you pile onto that with introducing a third party. You know, someone either to donate the egg, you know, and then she's artificially inseminated, or she carries the father and the mother's child, or, you know, there's,
yes,
all
sir,
kinds of
right?
combinations of the evil. It all adds up,
mm-hmm,
and then you get into the, and then beyond that, you know, you see the effects of what happens when you disregard the moral law and you treat a child like a piece of property, even if it's a wanted piece of property,
mm-hmm,
and a loved piece of property. It's still a piece of property because you're violating that child's right to have a normal identity,
right?
You know, and you're introducing all these crazy moral dilemmas, these Frankenstein type of situations in which, you know, who's the real mother? Like we were talking before the show about who's the biological mother. And I know they have the official technical designations and whatnot. Who really is the donor? Who's,
right,
who's you know, biologically related to the child that's conceived, or the woman who carries it? Carries the child, you know, in her womb for 9 months and has her own blood flowing through the child's veins. Who really has a right to that child? Who really is the mother there? And then all these embryos that are created and then frozen, what do you do with them? There's this ongoing controversy about, you know, what to do with these children. And, you know, I can't, you know, I sympathize with people who think it's a great thing to do to take these embryos and have them implanted,
mm-hmm, adopting them,
you know, so because otherwise they would die. But this is still a Frankenstein situation,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and there are many moralists who don't believe it's right because,
mm-hmm,
it still involves embryo transfer,
right,
and it's not right, you know.
And then there's also
it's just a horrible. There's no solution to these problems.
No.
There's no solution to these problems other than to obey the natural law.
Right.
From the beginning. And the more we accommodate ourselves to this, the more we see the celebrities going out and having someone else carry their child, and the more we get used to this, you know, the more it becomes part of our culture,
mm-hmm,
and the harder it is to stop.
I know. So we have, Elton John, who has a child now,
yeah,
that, you know, some woman carried for
him.
Yeah,
I want to quote from the Catechism. It's number 2378, and it's the Church, you know, saying the hard word, but it's really true. And parents and prospective parents, people who are married and want to have children and cannot, it's a cross, you know, but life is that way. There's certain things that we would like to have, and we try and we do the best that we can in a moral way, trying to pursue our vocation to obtain these things that we naturally and very laudably want to have. And it's very laudable for parents to want to have children. But no one ultimately has a right to a human person. The Catechism says, a child is not something owed to one, but is a gift. The supreme gift of marriage is a human person. A child may not be considered a piece of property, an idea to which an alleged right to a child would lead. In this area, Only the child possesses genuine rights, the right to be the fruit of the specific act of conjugal love, of the conjugal love of its parents, and the right to be respected as a person from the moment of his conception. Now that means, yeah, you can't go to whatever lengths you want to make sure that you have a child. But at the same time, if we obeyed the hard word of the church, of Jesus Christ ultimately, on this specific point, you know, we wouldn't be creating these really monstrous, mm-hmm. monstrous moral dilemmas.
And well, beyond the, you know, treating the embryos as pieces of property, because there've been multiple issues where people divorce and they have their eggs, you know, their embryos that are frozen, and the husband doesn't want the babies to live, the mother does want the babies to live, and, you know, almost always sides on the side of death. But, you know, I mean, there's all those dilemmas.
They never end.
Oh, I know.
And like I said, it just keeps piling on.
Yeah. And then now, you know, more recently, you know, well, we have all these excess embryos. Why can't we just experiment on them? Right. And, you know, that led to human embryonic stem cell research. Right. And, of course, they're not going to have nearly enough embryos in order to do the types of research that they want to do. So now that they can recreate embryos, so not only are they using the spare embryos, but they're making new human beings to do this diabolical research on. And then, oh, well, we want to clone, and it's just snowballing into hell.
Oh, yeah, and it's been doing that ever since we've adopted the contraceptive mentality. Everything the Holy Father, Pope Paul VI said, you know, came to pass. He was, you know, right on the money.
It's a beautiful,
he said,
beautiful document.
Don't do this. Please do not do this. You know, he was very countercultural. He was prophetic, you know, speaking the hard word to an age that doesn't want to hear it. But he was right. He is right.
He's absolutely right. And then the church has taken so much grief. You know, even, you know, every time we elect a new pope, oh, is this the one that's going to drop contraception? Yeah. You know, is this the one that's
And I think there are even Catholics that are infertile, that are confused and think that the only reason this is wrong is because embryos are killed in that type of thing. So they're very, you know, sometimes, well, this is a great idea to adopt these, what they call them, snowflake babies.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't. There's no definitive decision on the church, but you know, it's bad stuff.
It is. I mean, it's asking the church to, you know, weigh in on morally on a something was sinful to begin with, mm-hmm. you know, and then, you know, does the church side? Well, you know, if all these snowflake babies are adopted, does that mean that the initial act was okay, and does that encourage further, you know, in vitro fertilization?
Especially, you know, there's this motivation to do this because there are so many people that want to have children that can't have children.
Right.
It's so expensive. I don't know how expensive it is to go through this process, but it's so expensive and very difficult sometimes to qualify, whatever, you know, in order to get to the front of a waiting list for adoption.
Oh, it's really difficult because we're aborting all of our babies.
So this isn't, you know, there's a sort of ulterior motive behind it to go through with
mm-hmm.
it, you know.
And I think what you brought up as far as, you know, people believing that they have a right to be parents, that is the crux of it. You know, you're absolutely correct in saying that it's not a right.
Well, you know, the people that a mom and a woman, man and a woman have a right to marry, they have a right to pursue a family, they have a right, you know, to have children and all of that. But it's not an absolute right where you can just say, you know, I want to have a child and I'm gonna have one, you know, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Not from God's point of view. God has a plan. God has a plan. He has it, and there is this fundamental reality of the dignity of the human person. That child has, that child's rights are fundamental in this question
mm-hmm.
here. It's that child as a human person. That child has rights, and it's not enough for you to say, well, I'm going to love this child. You know, the dignity of the human person is what God made it to be, and we just need to respect that. And if we do, we will just avoid a lot of trouble.
Oh, absolutely.
Again, it's sort of this narrow view of that people sometimes have of me and my little world and what I would like to have, and we don't always look at the consequences that it has for society and for generations to come.
And I think you hit the nail right there with society. You know, I mean, look at what our contraceptive, besides all of these moral dilemmas, look what our contraceptive mentality has created. You know, there's so many single parent families. There's, you know, society is just crumbling, and it's because the family unit has been dissociated.
Yeah.
And Pope Paul VI was absolutely right.
And that's a sensitive area. There's a lot of people that are trying to do the best they can in single parent families, and they should be commended for the work that they're doing. But again, the church needs to be prophetic. We all need to be prophetic and be honest and realize the facts that children do better with a mom and a dad. Mm-hmm. That divorce is not a good thing if it can be avoided, and you know. We gotta do what we can to seek the mercy and the grace of God, ultimately, to help us solve these problems and restore family life and common sense and the natural law.
And I really think it would help viewers to actually get a hold of Humana Vitae and read it.
Sure.
It's very short. Compared to a lot of other things that the Pope's write. But it's absolutely beautiful. And like we've said so many times, you'd be amazed at how accurate and how dead on he was, you know, people would think he's a, you know, old man, you know, in Rome, but he absolutely nailed everything.
Yeah.
And who would have thought, really, that our society would come to this, and basically, like you said, going back to accepting contraception.
Yeah, the church has got the wisdom of Jesus Christ, and ultimately, the natural law that's written in the heart of man, that's written into the fabric of creation, into the nature that God has given to man, is in fact God-given, and the church has that wisdom to pass on. And it's not really like rocket science to figure that if you disregard God's plan that you're going to have problems down the road.
Yeah, and if we were open to life and recognize children as a gift from God, we wouldn't contracept, and when we... then we wouldn't need abortion, because we would still be open to life. Again, the marriage would remain intact.
We'd have young people, we'd have a younger population, you know,
supporting the elderly, the growing.
We wouldn't have the problems that Japan is having now with their older population.
And China's having now, and they realized, when we killed all the baby girls, now we have no women for our men. I mean, that doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that was not a good plan. So if we, like you say, if we listened to God's plan for us and followed it, we wouldn't have all these moral dilemmas. And I know on pro-lifers, it just seems to start caving in, you know. Not only are you facing abortion, but, you know, there's... euthanasia, it just, all of these things just start to weigh so heavy on you.
We're in Easter time. I don't know when this is going to air, but we just celebrated Easter, and Easter is the crown and the guarantee that the hard words of our Lord are fruitful. Ultimately, there's a turn, there's an unexpected victory at the end of a long road that is difficult, and it's miraculous. It's earth shaking, and those who follow Jesus on the road to Jerusalem will experience that power one way or another. I mean, we just gotta persevere. Ultimately.
But a lot of people don't know they're not on the right road, and I think that's the problem. they're not well, on the right
yeah,
road.
They have to hear the word. Who's, how are they going to believe if they don't hear the word preached? You know, how is that going to transform their lives? Yeah, they need to hear the truth, definitely. And sometimes, you know, we need to have a little more moral fortitude to say things that people maybe not initially going to be eager to hear.
Right, and I think one of the messages,
and people aren't eager to hear that they, you know, that they can't just do anything they want.
Right, including in vitro fertilization, yeah. Because you know it is heartbreaking to not be able to conceive, and science gives us this, you know, mm-hmm. quote unquote gift, which isn't, and a lot of people aren't going to be receptive to the fact that it's not right. And the church has said that from the beginning, that it's not right. And it's hard, it's a hard message to tell. I mean, I have friends that, you know, have done in vitro fertilization, and it's a hard message to receive, but yeah. they have to know.
Yeah. Yeah, and hopefully people will start to look at the consequences that we're already experiencing or have been experiencing for a long time now, and begin to realize that, wait a second, you know, maybe the church isn't really anti-science the way she's always accused of being anti-science, simply because she says that, you know, there has to be an ethical use of science, mm-hmm. that we can't just simply do something because we have the power to do it.
I know. Every time we try to act like God or become gods, we get knocked off our high pedestal.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get knocked off before we just completely destroy things,
because you
know we have the and people do recognize it to some, you know, some extent. They recognize that, you know, that we can destroy the planet, you know, and they don't think that's a good idea, that we have, they think that we have to treat the planet responsibly, that we have to realize that it's not right to you know, use technology to destroy the planet. So, and that's not anti-science to say, look, we better, you know, put some limits on some of the things that we do, mm-hmm. because they're dangerous and they can harm not only ourselves but our future generations. So it's not too hard. It shouldn't be too hard of an extension to say, you know, we can do the same thing to our own families. And
absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for joining us. I really encourage you to go out and just Google Humana Vitae. Read the document. It's a beautiful, beautiful document, and I promise it'll change your life. It is really amazing that this man wrote this so long ago. And we hope that when you look in the mirror the next time, you realize yours too is the face of pro-life. Please join us again next time.